What have we got going on, Tabin? What do we got going on?
What have we got going on the mayonnaise with the alfalfa sprouts? That is the question.
You know, I haven't had alfalfa sprouts on a sandwich since high school.
I love alfalfa sprouts on a... It's healthy, too.
Hi!
Hi!
Hi! How are you doing, Barry?
Hey! How are we doing? Hey! 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 Oh,
Okay, hi.
This is Barely Furcasting, featuring Tabin, an Injured Nerves audio production.
A huge Mubark fluff to everyone and every species in the Potiverse. Thank you for listening. I am Barely Normal, one of your co-hosts with no ghosts. And with me is Tabin. Hello, Tabin.
Hello. What's happening? What is even happening right now?
I don't know. We've been doing this podcast for a while now, but you know, you'd think by now we'd have this thing fingered out.
But yeah, I don't know.
Thing, so yes, this thing this, fingered out. Yeah,
with your no ghost, because you're not
no
a ghost.
Apparently. I'm the co-host with no ghost. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Tabin. I am a pup. Bark, bark. Thank you, Annie, for that is listening to us on this evening or morning or whenever it is, and I agree, a huge moo bark fluff to everyone out there.
So before we get much further in, I need to share a story about my hubby.
Now
I have to tell you, my hubby does not like puns.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
He often rolls his eyes about dad jokes.
I could see that happening.
Yes. But yesterday he had a dental crisis. Oh. And so he went to the dentist and they said, well, we take a look at it now, but when you need to schedule an appointment for tomorrow. And so he was at the desk and they says, we'll schedule you for 2:30 tomorrow. And he says, ha ha, that's a great time to go to the dentist, 2:30. And the girl says, well, what do you mean? He says, because it's tooth hurdy. And she was like, oh, wow, you must have a dad that likes dad jokes. And he's like, no, I have a husband that loves them.
That's how he knew.
And
well,
I said,
I'm proud
wow,
of him for doing that.
Right? He actually did something like that in public. I was like, wow.
On
his own, without me around. If I had said that when he was crazy. There, he would have been embarrassed.
Yeah, see, exactly. But the tooth is on the other face now or something.
Right. And he went in and they got things taken care of. So there we go.
So that was an exciting thing.
It was. I mean, my husband not only did a pun, but a dad joke at the same time
to a complete stranger. Oh, that's so funny.
I have two cans of podcast fluid, and one of them actually has a toucan on it. So that's kind of fun.
It's true. So you really have four cans.
But we'll share this with you. Here's the sound for you ASMR people. There we go. Okay.
You ASMR people?
We talked about this many pods ago.
This sounds very familiar.
Mm-hmm. It's about sounds. You are correct. It is about sounds.
Oh, onomatopoeias.
Do you have anything before we get into last week today?
I do. I have two things. So my honey made this amazing white bean chili that was wonderful and everything. And he makes a lot of it. He usually goes overboard. Like, he doesn't just make a little bit of something. It's like a full, huge, full crock pot of it. So there's leftovers, which is great because it's really good. And I like it. It's really good. So the crock pot had to go back in the refrigerator, but there wasn't, you know, it's a big crock pot. There wasn't room. So I had to wash some things in order to make room for it and everything. So I looked at the crock pot and what's around it to try and count how many things I needed to wash. And apparently now this is how to count, because this is how I counted the things. I counted one spoon bowl. So one spoon bowl is now how we count. So for this changes everything, right? Because like the 12 days of Christmas, when, you know, now goes 5 golden rings, 4 calling birds, bowl, French hen, spoon, turtle doves. And right. So because that's how we count now. And of course, this also means that my 12 days of Pupmas song now goes 5 hugs from Tabin, 4 leaves to chase, bowl, bark, bark, spoon, puppy pups, and a puppy hug. So very fluffy. So remember, it goes 1 spoon, bowl, 4, 5.
One spoon, bowl, 4, 5.
I don't, So the other thing is I came up with a new chant or cheer. It's a combination of one of those things.
A chant to cheer.
A chant to cheer.
Chant to
cheer. Not to be confused with a...
temperature.
Yeah, something like that. There's something there. I don't know. So it goes, when I say bark, you say fluff. When I fluff. Say bark, you... Fluff. Well, not yet.
Oh,
I didn't
okay,
say bark
sorry.
Yet. Yeah.
Oh, but you did. So, you said, when I say bark, you say fluff.
Well, hold on. Okay.
Okay.
You're getting excited.
Okay.
You're getting excited. It goes,
I know.
When I say bark, you say fluff. When I say bark, you say fluff. Then I say, well, that's not part of the cheer. I don't say then I say, but then I say, then I say bark.
Fluff.
And so.
Fluff.
Yes. So let's try it. Okay.
Okay.
I'm
let's
ready.
Try it again.
Okay. Okay. When I say bark, you say fluff. When I say bark, you say fluff. Bark.
Fluff.
Bark.
Fluff.
Bark.
Fluff.
Bark.
Fluff.
And there we go. We did it. We got through it. Okay. We're done. That was quite a journey that I think we all went on.
You know, I'd say we're on a train, but we derailed before it even left the station.
It didn't even get to the station.
No, it's like at the station looking at us going, we'd like to come over there, but we'd we like can't because we're not on the rails.
So. Oh, my fluff. Should we start the podcast now?
Well, I think we've started the podcast.
Oh, good, good.
Whether or not anybody's still listening is another
That's
story.
The question.
So,
That's the question.
But that is the question. And it's almost time for 5 minute first for fun. But before we get to that, because I don't want to start with last week today, and then have to stop and then come back, because I know we have a fur that wants to come in for 5 minute fur. So, but I want to give you our weekly challenge, because I remembered that I forgot last week to give a challenge. So this week, I'm going to give you a really hard challenge. I would like a fur, any fur, you furs out there in the podiverse, to find an elderly person, an elder, if you would, somebody that's been around the furry block a couple of times, maybe not a furry, maybe a regular person, but ask them about their life and sit and chat with them for a while. That's all they really want.
Nice.
They want to tell you about what they've been through. And I mean, you might find a nice person, but listen to what they have to say. A curmudgeon.
What's a curmudgeon?
What's a curmudgeon? You've never heard of a curmudgeon?
I've never heard of a curmudgeon. I've heard of a cur. That's like a doggy dog, but like me. But I haven't heard of a curmudgeon.
So a curmudgeon would be, do you remember when you were but a wee pup? Not a pup that you are now, but a wee pup.
A wee pup.
And you'd be playing on somebody's lawn, and they would come out and say, get off my grass. You dumb kids, get off my grass.
That actually happened to me yesterday. Yep. Oh,
well, yeah.
Okay.
That's a curmudgeon.
I see.
An old grumpy person, a curmudgeon. Get off. Hey, you dumb kids, what are you doing out there? Get off my lawn.
Whippersnappers, you and your Fruit Loops. Yes, but in any case, yes, I think that's a wonderful challenge to do, you know, get to know about an elderly person or fur's life. And because I'm sure they've got lots of wonderful things to say and wise words of wisdom. So that's a
wise words of wisdom, of which we ask our guests a lot.
Yes.
So, all right, I'm going to post the link and we're going to see what comes in.
Or
who comes in.
We're waiting about the challenge. And I mean, I've said this before, but you know, it would be great if any of you furs that actually do the challenge stuff, this really cool, I think, challenge stuff, let us know. Send us a tweet to Furcasting or an email or something and let us know. Tell us about your exploits with the challengings.
So the fur that said they were going to come in for 5 minute furs is named Ink. Why? We will find out if they come in.
That's
But they asked to, you know, when it's going to happen and how it's going to happen and how do we do this. And so I chatted with them and I told them and I said, we have very friendly furs in our PFFT chat. And if you say you're going to come in, they'll let you do the link.
For any fur out there that doesn't know, the way it normally works is the first, once the link is posted, the first fur that gets in is in. But so we're saying they're nice. If you want in, the other furs in the chat will let you in.
I can tell an interesting story. Oh. So our friends, my husband's friends and my friends, many of them who are not furries have started listening to the podcast because, well, they're my friends. One of them was over the other day and he was talking about how he listens to the podcast. And I asked him, well, what do you listen to the podcast for? He says, well, I love all the jokes, all the puns, And the guests that you have on are amazing. And I said, well, thank you very much. And then he looked at my husband and said, why don't you like the Muppets? Because apparently he had listened to the episode where I had said my husband doesn't like the Muppets.
Oh, okay. And, okay. I thought he was referring to furries, but okay. Okay.
No. Well, and my husband says, it's just puppets. And our friend says, yes, but they're furries as well. And I was like, I never thought of it that way. Huh. I mean, they're animals. They're fuzzy. They're furry. You know, so, hey, there you go.
Okay.
Poor little ink.
No, he says they're trying to get in. He just said something like that. Oh. It won't let
them in. They said they're trying to get in. It says it won't let them in. So our 5-minute first, we had someone that wanted to come on. They weren't able to link in. They had some technology there in Ireland, and something went wrong. So unfortunately, we didn't get the 5-minute first today. So hopefully next week,
we can get this
person into 5-minute first. Ooh. So we're going to move on to last week today.
Last week today.
So last week, we had a sketch that we did, the classic comedy sketch of the Marx Brothers. Now, the Marx Brothers were back in the early 1900s.
They're like way back there.
They started in vaudeville in the early 1900s. They went on to movies. And in fact, interesting thing about the Marx Brothers, they made their first movie. They hated it, hated doing it, thought the movie sucked.
Oh, really?
Well, in those days, yeah. And they wanted it pulled. They didn't want it released. They didn't want to do movies ever again. But it received so much good press and people loved it that the studios that was their studio just said, no, you need to do more because we're going to make hundreds of dollars, you know.
Hundreds of dollars.
Yes. Yeah, that was a lot of money back then. There was a line in there that said, I have a haddock. Oh, that's interesting. I have a haddock too. What do you take for a haddock? Meaning a headache, right?
Yep.
And the other character says, sometimes I take a calomel, or sometimes I take an aspirin, sometimes I take a calomel. The other character says, I'd walk a mile for a calomel.
Oh, not caramel. Now, I thought it was caramel, but it's calomel.
No, calomel.
Oh.
And then he says, no, that's the chocolate calomel. That's a different thing. But
I see. Yeah.
So there's puns in the joke.
Okay.
But calomel was a headache remedy in the early 30s, 1930s. It was a medicine that was used for a lot of different ailments, if you will. I say that all the time, if you will. If you will. Hello, Will.
Hello, Will. How are you doing?
Will is here.
Mr. Wheaton.
Will Wheaton.
But it was made with mercury.
Oh.
We know now that mercury is not good for you. You should not ingest it at all.
At all.
Ever. No. But people did all the time. And calomel was a mercury-based pill that would cure a headache. Of course it did. It was killing your brain cells.
It just went away. This is amazing. I should try this.
Yes. And so they, you know, it would cause way more health issues later on with all the things that it did bad for you as opposed to the good stuff. And then the other line was, I would walk a mile for a calomel. Now, that's a line from an old cigarette ad, which, of course, we know now are bad for you as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You know, and, you know, back in those days, everybody smoked. Your doctors smoked when they would give you an exam.
Yeah, in the room.
In the room with you. They were smoking in the room. You'd go, there was ashtrays everywhere. I mean, in every sitting room and everything, there would be like ashtrays that on separate stands that would sit next to the couch so you could put your cigarettes out.
The stands would sit.
So the line was, it was for the Camel cigarettes, I would walk a mile for a Camel. It was an advertising campaign that it was such a good cigarette that you could walk a mile to get one.
Wow.
And then I said the clip was from a movie called A Day at the Races. It was actually from the movie Horse Feathers, in case any Marx Brother fan out there got mad at us. That's what it was.
Yes. Sorry. We didn't mean to assume your title.
And then we talked about kitties, because you had talked about Kittysaurus and a group of kitties. And we said, we asked each other what a group of kitties was. Well, it's got three names. It could be a clowder, C-L-O-W-D-E-R, of kitties, or a clutter of kitties, or it could also be called a glaring of kitties. Now, I like glaring best because if I walk into a group of cats and they all turn and look at you, they kind of glare at you. So that's what they do to me. So
yeah,
I like glaring of cats.
Yeah. But if you had a clowder of kitties, does that mean you're at the sea? You know, you always go to the sea and you go to a restaurant, you get clam clowder. So now you get kitty clowder? I don't know.
Kitty clowder? No.
Oh, okay. Doesn't work that way. Okay.
And then you had a long discussion about moss.
I did.
We had a very long discussion about moss, and I said it was a lichen, but it's not. Moss is an actual plant, whereas lichens are not actual plants. They're a fungus.
They're fungus, right, right.
Yeah, so I was mistaken, and I corrected myself before our chief fact checker got a hold of me. So
that's true. No, that's true. You have a good point. This was very good to nip this in the bud. Not the bun, but the bud.
Nip it in the bud.
That's what I have for last week tonight. What do you have? Or last week today, what do you have? Anything?
Last week, we talked about how AC was canceled, and it was on, you had mentioned it was on NBC News and everything, and I thought that was cool. So I went to look for it. Mm-hmm. And actually, before I found the NBC News thing, it also comes up on Yahoo Sports that AC was canceled, which I thought was interesting. I don't even know why, but okay.
Yahoo Sports.
Yahoo Sports. There are so many things.
I did not know being a furry was a sport.
Apparently it is. I didn't even know that Yahoo still was around, but.
Well, and if it's a sport, think of all the high schooler nerds that can now say, I'm a furry. That's a sport. Give me an A in PE.
So we're really helping the youngins out.
Helping them youngins.
Yeah. The other was, so episode 46, we talked about,
would you like to play a game of chess?
And you were saying that it wasn't, so I found it. It was actually on 2001 A Space Odyssey. Indeed, HAL 9000 said it.
Really?
Would you like to play a game of chess? I play very well.
But it might have been on War Games too, like you were talking about. I can kind of hear that too. So I'm not sure.
How about a nice game of chess?
But yeah, so that's my last week today.
Anything else that you would like to discuss before we move on to anything in particular?
Oh, yeah. It turns out there is.
There might be some things you want to talk about. I can see that. Yes.
So you're the history bear, so you might already know this. So if you know this, since you're a history bear, you can tell our listeners. And if you don't know, then I will. Today that we're recording this is actually April Fool's Day. Woo! And Barely, do you know the history and origin of April Fool's Day?
I'm going to ask you, my friend Tabin, if you would explain to our listeners the origins of the April of Fool's Day.
Yes, I would love to. Thank you for that wonderful, unprovoked question, Barely. No one really knows for sure, but there are good guesses. So let me read you about this. April Fool's Day, celebrated on April 1st each year, has been celebrated for several centuries by several different cultures, though its exact origins remain a mystery. April Fool's Day traditions include playing hoaxes or practical jokes on others, often yelling April Fools at the end to clue the subject of the April Fool's prank. While its exact history is shrouded in mystery, the embrace of April Fool's Day jokes by the media and major brands has ensured the unofficial holiday's long life. As far as the origins go, even though there's mystery, there are good speculations. Some historians speculate that April Fool's Day dates back to 1582, when France switched from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar, as called for by the Council of Trent in 1563. In the Julian calendar, as in the Hindu calendar, the new year began with the spring equinox around April 1st. People who were slow to get the news or failed to recognize that the start of the new year had moved to January 1st and continued to celebrate it during the last week of March through April 1st became the butt of jokes and hoaxes and were called quote-unquote April Fools, which is amazing. Hmm. These pranks included having paper fish placed on their backs and being referred to as poisson d'avril, which is French for April fish, said to symbolize a young, easily caught fish and a gullible person. And there you have it.
April fish.
So I have that. And yes, ask me, Barely, do you have something else before we move
on? Do you have anything else you would like to chat about, Tabin?
I do. I do. Thank you so much for asking. Good.
Well, you're quite welcome.
This was
it's what I do.
Very, very unprovoked. Thank you. Very nice for
or unprompted here, even.
Or unprompted.
I would never provoke you.
Oh my cow. So this was very funny. interesting, I guess, is, so I forget what I was doing. I was filling out a form or a thing, and you know, they always ask you for languages or what's your preferred language, or it was something along that lines. And usually there's this big, huge list of, you know, English, Spanish, Chinese.
I like Chinese.
Arabic, you know, the normal things, French, whatever, the normal things.
All those things, yes.
This particular list was very short, which, you know, sometimes it is, and you would expect like English, Spanish, French, you know, the normals. Here's this list that my only choices were Arabic, Chukchi, English, Hmong, Korean, Marshallese, Russian, and simplified Chinese. Those were my only choices.
Wow.
I have so many questions. And one of them is, why not Spanish or French, for example? And another is, what is Chukchi? And what is Marshallese, for example? So I looked up Chukchi anyway. The Chukchi language is also rendered as Trukchi, is a Trukic. So already there's like countries that I have never even heard of.
Yes.
It's a Trukic language of the Austronesian language family, spoken primarily in the islands of Chuuk in the Caroline Islands of Micronesia. There's a place called Micronesia. I didn't even know.
It's these tiny little
tiny. See the
tiny little knees.
I have tiny knees. I'm like a bee's knees or something. Yes, that's exactly.
You have micro knees.
There are communities of speakers on Pohnpei, Guam, and the Hawaiian Islands as well. Okay. Estimates show that there are about 45,900 speakers in Micronesia. Hmm. That was a bit of interesting, useless trivia. But why was the list like only Chukanese and Marshmallowese? I don't know. Anyway.
Marshmallowese? So
it was, let's see.
Marshmallowese.
With a graze of ease, I ate the marshmallow.
So moving on to mailbag. The only thing that came in the mailbag for me this week, the swag from FC. Did you get your swag?
I did. I think you said you got yours a few days ago. I just got mine today. I haven't even opened it up yet. But yeah, I got it. At least I assume that's what it is. It was a black little bag thingy with stuff in it. So I'm assuming that's what it is. But
I was actually disappointed because I thought the shirt might glow in the dark, but it didn't glow in the dark. I was very disappointed.
Oh, does it look all like neonish like it?
It looks like it should glow in the dark.
Oh, okay.
So...
Well, and I thought, good heads up.
Glow in the dark shirt. So I held it under a light and then I ran into a dark room and it was like,
oh,
I was disappointed.
Thank you for doing that for me in advance so that I would know not to be disappointed.
That it does not glow in the dark. Yes.
Okay.
So we should move on to media.
That's what I say me, apparently.
That's what you say. Okay. Cartoon that I watch, an adult cartoon that I watch, called Solar Opposites, and it's from the comedy team that brings you Rick and Morty. I watched a couple of episodes. They're very good. Do you remember the show, or did you ever watch the show The Goldbergs?
Yes, yes. We are actually in the middle. I think we've seen two or three seasons, yeah.
The actor that plays Adam Goldberg, he's the voice of one of the characters on Solar Opposites.
Okay, cool. So, have to check that out.
Show. It's on Hulu. And then every once in a while, I will turn on an episode of Golden Girls, which is so much fun
really?
To watch.
Wow.
And I watched a couple episodes of that this week. Yeah. And there is a new game out for the phone. And it's very furry.
And what is it, Mr. Barely?
It's Crash Bandicoot.
That's your game.
That's my game. And it's available on the iPhone and the phone now. So that's it. That's all my media for the week. What about you?
Let's see. So we're still watching Lucifer. Still love that show. So good. It's gotten like really good. Well, we finished the first season of Mr. Mayor. We've talked about this last week and everything, but it is still really good. I still really like it. They only have one season. Looking forward to the next season. We watched a movie actually called Mulligans. Have you heard of this movie?
I have not, but I do remember a mulligan is something in a golf?
It's a golf term. It's a golf term. It's when you take it over type thing. There's a movie, and yes, it's about golf. Well, not about golf, but there's golf in it. It's called Mulligans. I'd seen it before, but like a long time ago, me and my hubby saw it, but we rewatched it just recently, and it's a gay thing. It's from 2008. It's a 2008 Canadian romantic drama film written by actor and writer Charlie David, and is directed by Chip Hale, who I don't even know, but apparently that's... And it also stars people, Tia Gill of Queer as Folk and Dante's Cove. So he was in there. It was a good show. It's a good movie. I recommend it. Check it out. And also, so it's not what we're watching, but it's in the media section. I forget, one or two episodes ago, you had mentioned Space Cats Game that was going to come out. And so I looked it up because I was listening to that episode the other day. And it's like, oh, yeah, I want to check that out. So I looked. It's on Steam. It doesn't officially release. The anticipated date isn't until November of 2021 this year. But they do have.
Oh, they backed it up. Because when I read about it, it was supposed to be June.
This happens with games, you know. Yeah, no. So now now it's November. But they do have a little prologue, little demo version you can play. It looks like it's for a limited time that it's going to be out there. But I was able to actually catch it. It's a free download. Nice. So I downloaded it. It looks really good, really cool. For any fur that's played Armello, it reminds me of that. Armello is a real... And if you haven't played Armello, by the way, really fun, awesome furry strategy turn-based game. In general, I really recommend it. It's Steam. It's on Steam also, Armello. Anyway, but it's fun. And you can play Armello with other furs and stuff. Space Cats Tactics. It's a turn-based game. And your kitty's in outer space and stuff. And, it's just one of those cool RPG things. Now, I unfortunately could not get too far into this free demo because you get to a point and you have to like use your tractor beam thing. You're in space. Really good graphics, by the way. You have to use your tractor beam thing to like pull cargo that you just destroyed into. And I couldn't make that work. So maybe this is still a bug in their demo version that they have to work out. But maybe it was just a clever hook.
Could be. They hooked the pup.
If they did hook the pup, though, I'm looking forward to November to try the full thing out. That's my media for the week.
Did you make a list of the things you wanted to read?
In last week's episode, I mentioned that we were talking about things we have been reading, which wasn't anything. But I did mention I want to make a list of all the things I want to read. The task for me for this week was to make that list. So
that's not so much a list as a stack of books.
It's kind of a library, actually, that I want to read.
Yes.
But just, I guess, as a shout out to things I want to read, and they're mostly Kyle Gold books, actually, it turns out. Kyle Gold has written in 2017, Camouflage, looks really good, really great artwork with Rukus, of course. It's supposed to be a really good book. I'm really looking forward to reading it. Shadow of the Father looks really good. I won't take time reading all the synopsis on back. So he has the Vol trilogy. I think when we had him on the show, we talked about the Vol trilogy. I've read the first one of the trilogy, and I've been trying hard to read the second one. Kyle signed it for me at a con sometime, FCE 2018, it looks like. And he said, to Tabin, who is a good pup. So that was very wonderful. Wrote this shorter thing called Dude, Where's My Fox? So I've read all of Rukus's stuff, except for she has a trilogy off the beaten path, and I haven't read that yet, so I'd like to do that. You might remember before we've talked about Furries Among Us, edited by Thurston Howell.
A millionaire and his wife.
Got a lot of good information, short stories, real true facts and all that stuff. They have three of them, and I've read the first one. I want to read the second. I talked about before on one of the episodes, Tales of Haven Celestia, 13 stories of striving for peace in a treacherous universe.
It's treacherous.
That reminds me of, what's his name from Big Bang Theory?
Oh, Kripke.
Kripke, yeah, exactly. Yes. And the Furry Future is nice novel that has a whole bunch of short stories, futuristic furry short stories in it. So those are all the things I want to read. That's that.
I want to talk about furry words. A lot of furs have sent in messages on Telegram and Twitter about, you should talk about furry words. There's a word out there, and we may not talk about this all the time, but there's a word out there that's come up a lot in the past week. All of a sudden, I don't know why, and it's smol. S-M-O-L. You actually pronounce it smol, or like the Scandinavians, it's smol.
You did get really good with that.
There's no umlaut over the o, so I don't know that it would be smol, but it's,
We can pretend.
But it's smol, or smol, comes from the doggo lingo, and it's an affectionate way of saying someone or something is small in size and so cute that you just want to squeeze them.
Squeezies. That's what
Smole is. Yeah. It's just often described as animals such as puppies, kittens, bunnies.
I like all those.
And even teeny tiny little reptiles. A lot of times it will be referred to as a Smole bean. That's a Smole bean. Such as a significant other, famous person, or child who is petite but precious.
Well, and do you know where bean comes from? Do you know what the bean is referring to?
Yes, that's the pads on the
kitty paws. Yeah.
Or the puppy paws. Those are beans. Toe beans.
Two beans is better than one because you have two of them.
Two bean or not, or two, not bean. Two bean.
That
is the paw.
That is the pawsy paw.
Okay. I think we should get to our guest. We've wasted enough time.
Oh,
our listeners are waiting, especially for this guest. I'm sure our guest this week is Catherine Gandy of Sarvey Wildlife, which is the ongoing charity for Anthro Northwest in Seattle. She is a wonderful, wonderful, talented person. I say we get to her interview. What do you say?
I say, and I have actually met her long ago, which if you listen to the interview, which is happening now, we will talk about.
In just a few seconds.
Just a few seconds.
You will hear him talk about
no
this.
No spoiler. Yes. I'm just saying. I'm letting you know what's going to happen. But yes, she's wonderful, and they have a wonderful, wonderful charity going on there. So yes, let's talk to her and find out about Sarvey Wildlife.
So joining us tonight, today, this afternoon, or whatever you're listening to it in the Podiverse, is Catherine Gandy from Sarvey Wildlife in Arlington, Washington. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, you're quite welcome. Taben, I understand you have some questions you would like to discuss with Catherine.
It turns out, believe it or not, I do, and that would be wonderful. So I'm just going to do it because it's amazing and wonderful. And so, yes, Catherine, welcome. Also, thank you for being on the show, and you're welcome, I guess. But thank you for being on the show. You are our first charity / wildlife / this sort of thing on the show. So thank you very much. I'm looking forward. I wag to talk to you about it. And in case, just so that you know, we are furries here. I hope you don't get scared off all of a sudden when I say that.
No, so I'm a furry too, so totally fine with me.
Oh, wow. This is craziness. I don't know if I can even understand what's going on here. Wow, I'm so excited, even more so right now. Okay, well, I'll definitely be getting back to that later. So, Sarvey Wildlife, it's great. It's the Anthro Northwest charity, so thank you very much for that. And so what is the mission of Sarvey Wildlife?
So we aim to rescue, rehabilitate, and release native wildlife in Washington. Anyone can bring us an ill or orphaned animal, and we will assess it, provide medical and supportive care until it is ready to be released back into the wild.
Anyone can just come and take this animal to you, and you will help take care of them. And you're a nonprofit organization. Is that right? That's very wonderful.
Yeah, that's correct.
How long has Sarvey been around, and where did it start and come from and all that good stuff?
So Sarvey Wildlife was founded in 1981 by Kay Baxter. She was the primary rehabilitator and the executive director until, not sure exactly the year, but she did pass away in 2008, and that's when the center changed hands to a new administration.
Changed paws, as it were.
Yeah, changed paws.
And so where did the name Sarvey come from? I mean, the founder's name was Baxter, so...
Mm-hmm. So Sarvey actually comes from a fish and wildlife officer that was integral in helping the center get on its feet. His name was William Sarvey.
Oh, okay.
Well, that explains it.
Mm-hmm. That does explain it. Turns out it's a simple explanation. No crazy going around the world. Mm-hmm. Or anything. So was he from around the area too?
Yeah.
Is this all always been local to Arlington?
Yes, it has.
Cool.
So he was a fish and wildlife officer in that area that helped us out helped the center out quite a bit in its early years.
Wonderful. So you are, what is your official, quote unquote, official recognition in the rehabilitation center there?
So I'm a licensed wildlife rehabilitator in the state of Washington. So I had to take a few tests. I had to put in about 500 hours of experience before I was allowed to take those tests. And then after passing them, I was officially licensed in this state.
Cool. So is that typical thing someone has to go through? So what education in general is required to work in wildlife rehabilitation?
So To be a wildlife rehabilitator, all you really have to do is gain enough experience hours and then take the exams. And that's specific to Washington. Other states have different requirements. To work at a center, you typically do have to have some sort of degree. I have a bachelor's in fish and wildlife science, personally. A lot of wildlife rehabilitators have similar degrees.
Cool. Wow.
That's interesting. So how did you come to want to do that?
So growing up, I always knew I wanted to do something with animals, but I was never sure I wanted to be a vet for a while, but then I realized I wasn't really cut out for the amount of schooling that required. So, yeah. So my first year at college, I started volunteering at a local wildlife rehabilitation center, and that was mostly cleaning cages and taking care of their education animals. But then one of the staff I worked with offered me an internship for that summer, and I loved it. Just jumped right in, taking care of the actual rehab patients. So it was really awesome and really opened the door for me.
Interesting. Okay, cool. I tried to volunteer at a wildlife rehabilitation center down in Oregon several years ago, but the list was so long to volunteer. And then they wound up going bankrupt, and I don't know whatever happened to all the animals.
Oh, no. That's awful.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have like 30 acres that just sits vacant now outside of Canby.
Oh, wow. That's really sad.
It is. So there's my experience with wildlife rehabilitation.
So, you know, as we said, we're furries. So it's very common, I think, that we in this community want to help out with animals and those things like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so what advice would you give someone who is interested in working in wildlife rehab or things such as this?
Definitely take the time to find a volunteer opportunity. Volunteering is huge to show you if you actually do want to do the work, especially because a lot of wildlife rehab is scrubbing cages and doing laundry and cleaning the floors and getting poop on you. Uh-oh. So it'll be a really good way to find out if it's something you're actually interested in. If you do volunteer and end up liking it, find an internship locally or across the country. I did an internship all the way across the country after my first one. And it was great. Taught me a lot more, gave me a lot more experience. So definitely volunteer, do an internship, join either a state or national wildlife rehabilitation association like the NWRA or IWRC, and just read as much about it as you can and get as much experience under your belt as you can.
And what do those letters stand for?
It's NWRA is the National Wildlife Rehabilitators Association. And then the IWRC is the International Wildlife Rehabilitation. Oh man, what does the C stand for? I can't remember what the C stands for off my head.
Cow.
Let's say commission.
Might be commission, yeah.
Good. That sounds official. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it actually should stand for cow.
I don't think so, but maybe.
Not as much. Maybe commit. But you just never know. So you said you went all the way across the United States for your internship. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. Where did you end up going?
I interned at the Center for Wildlife in Maine.
Oh, wow. Really? Way up there.
Yeah.
The Maine. Nice. And it's not even, did you work with horses since it was in Maine?
No, no horses, just native wildlife.
There's never, no horses. Okay. But I guess what animals do you like working with?
My favorite animals are definitely opossums and fawns.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I worked at a center in New Hampshire for a little while that their main animal they took care of was fawns and moose calves. So that was really interesting and I absolutely loved it. Those babies are just adorable and super fun. Same with possums. They're just so cute and I love watching them grow up so quickly.
Let's just delve into your fursona for right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Have you taken your fursona from some of the animals that you've rehabilitated?
No, actually my fursona is a pit bull.
Oh, okay.
I remember you now. Okay. Hi.
Yep. Zeff.
Yes. Pibble. Pibble. I remember not pibble. I remember pibble. Being so confused when I first heard pibble. It was from you. And I didn't even know what that, I didn't ask because I'm like, I don't really know what that is. And I was like, is that like some kind of pebble that went to the bathroom in the wrong place? I don't even know what that means. Then I finally realized, I think it was that night in the bowling alley, I realized what that meant. And I was like, wow, I'm so stupid. No, that makes sense now. Okay, great. No, the memories are flooding back. And you forgot your tail or something.
Yeah, but then that happened a lot.
I remember that.
I think it was that I forgot my belt, so I had nothing to attach my tail with. Yep.
Common occurrence. Yes, that happens. That would do it.
That's very important. Yes. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Yeah. How do I even remember things from that long ago? I was like a wee pup back then.
You were a wee pup. Yes.
Wow. Anyway, wee pup. So where did the pibble come from then?
To be honest, I'm not really sure. She started out as an Australian Shepherd hybrid, and then for some reason, I just went in a completely different direction with her.
Oh.
And she's been the same for about 5 years now. So don't really know why a pit bull, just they're cute. Oh,
okay. From Australian Shepherd to pit bull, you know, I mean, a logical leap, yes. And how long have you been Australian Shepherd / transition to pit bull?
She's been my fursona since about 2016, I think, is when I made her first suit. And that was like her old version. And then the year after, I made her current suit.
Oh, you made, wow, you're creative and artistic too.
I suppose, yeah, thank you.
I say yes, that's what I say. Well, that's really exciting. So does furry life ever cross over to work life, or do you keep them separate? Do your coworkers know, all that good stuff?
So my coworkers do know, yeah, they kind of sussed it out, I guess you could say, during my interview process. Because the way I found Sarvi was actually through going to Anthro Northwest and seeing their booth there and talking to the staff a little bit and stuff like that. So there's a big crossover there. And this past year, one of my friends and I actually made a fursuit to auction off for their charity auction. So it crosses over a little bit.
Awesome. Awesome. That's good. That's wonderful.
Well, it's good though, because I mean, clearly if Sarvi is part of the furry fandom because of, you know, being a charity, so they must, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously they know what the furry fandom is all about. So it was probably a benefit to you to be a furry, to go work for them. Like, ooh, we have one of our own. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of actually. They kind of expressed a similar sentiment.
I mean, you are a pit bull, but okay, we'll accept you anyway.
Let's get back to the wildlife stuff, David.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hi, how's it going,
Catherine? It's going great.
Great. So you've got all kinds of animals, and they have all different types of hibernation and habitat mm-hmm. patterns and all that good stuff. And the work you do, I mean, it's year-round. You don't just stop because it's like, oh, it's summer, let's not work anymore. So I imagine...
That'd be very bad.
I figured as much. So imagine the work that you must do must, like the type of work must vary by the season. So tell us a little bit about that. How does it change? Does it change drastically with the animals? And how does that work?
So spring, summer are definitely our really busy seasons. We actually extend our hours during the summer because we have so many babies in care that need to be fed until night. We have hundreds of animals at any given time in the center during the summer. Interns, we have to bring in people with seasonals and everything to come help us during the summer just because it is so busy with all the babies we get. Everything kind of slams to a halt in mid-fall, and then we're lucky if we get one intake a day in the fall and winter. So
really?
So fall and winter is mostly we spend most of our day cleaning, resetting everything up in preparation for spring and summer. It's drastically different based on the season.
Is it just because that's the like animal reproductive cycle and all that good stuff?
Exactly. Yeah. So everything's having babies in the spring and summer. All the migrant birds come back during the summer to breed. So we just see a lot more during those months.
Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense. So you probably like the summer and spring better to work then.
Yep, definitely.
Because you're just cleaning up all fall. So speaking of which, going back to, so you like the possum and the fawns.
Yep.
What are your least favorite? So now we know your least favorite season. What's your least favorite animal to work with?
Probably bunnies, especially baby bunnies. They're just so cute, but they're so prone to just dying from stress. It's absolutely horrible.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bunny.
Oh, no.
I love bunnies, but I just, it's hard to care for them because they are just such a fragile animal that almost any slight variation in their food or in their environment can actually make them sick and die. So, yeah. Oh,
wow. I didn't know that.
Wow. Yeah. Poor little buns. Oh, my. So it's like if they wake up one day and it's like there's a lint that's like a few millimeters to the right, it's like, that's it. It's done.
So I'm out. Goodbye, cruel world. I can't handle
the limping too. Yeah,
it's really sad, honestly.
That's really amazing because like domesticated bunnies, I know, can get it to be 12 or 13 years old. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wild bunnies definitely don't live that long. I think it's a couple years, yeah.
Oh, right. That's a couple years, right. That's right. Okay. Wow. So domesticated life really butches them up or something.
Yep. Yeah, well, definitely it has to do with how protected and all their medical care they get and everything like that.
So they're not really butch buns. They're just like, I'm being taken care of bun.
What are some common misconceptions that the public has about wildlife rehabilitation?
So a really big one, and it comes from media outlets like the Dodo. People just think we spend all day cuddling these baby animals and bottle feeding them and all this kind of stuff. When in actuality, a lot of our job is actually just kind of hands off.
You're cleaning up poop.
Yep. We're cleaning up poop. We're cleaning enclosures. We're spraying down enclosures outside. But a lot of people seem to think, especially with the babies, we just spend tons of time with them, handling them and stuff like that, when really the less time we spend with them, the better, especially because they are going to be released to the wild.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that. Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest one that people tend to have. And a lot of people seem to think it's some like really glamorous, fun job, when in actuality, it's definitely very hard work. And again, a lot of cleaning, a lot of just grunt labor work.
That's where the pit bull in you comes in handy.
Yeah, all that energy.
That's right. Yeah. So what kind of animals does Sarvi take or not take? I mean, if someone said, I have a lion, would you take a lion?
No. There's definitely other organizations that would deal with a situation like that.
Okay.
We take pretty much any native wildlife and even some non-native, because possums technically aren't native. They just kind of found their way up here.
Well, they may as well be. I mean, they're all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, pretty much anything you can find in the state, we will take.
Even turkeys?
Yeah, we do take turkeys. Actually, a few years back before I worked at the center, they did incubate, hatch, and successfully raise a bunch of baby turkeys.
And then release them to the wild.
There are wild turkeys. There are wild turkeys, Tabin.
I know, but where I live, they are frowned upon. They are deeply, deeply frowned upon.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that, David. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. One day I went out, because I'll admit, some days I go running around outside without a leash. I know, naughty pup, but I do sometimes. I know, naughty. See, I'm not as well behaved as a pit bull. I'm just a collie. I don't know. One day when I went out, there were 40 turkeys on the driveway.
Oh my gosh.
40. And it's not like they just drop by to say hi or anything. They stay there. They fly up and roost in the trees and everything. And they make all this noise. And they're like the most ungracious animals there are. And anyway, they're not a graceful animal. I could go on and on, but I won't. And I'll just say, good for you.
Okay, good.
So let me then ask, what's the best that we know probably? Well, okay, I'm going to take a wild guess what the worst part of your job is, but I'm going to let you tell us and we'll see if I'm
right. So start with the worst part?
We'll just start with the worst.
Definitely having to make the call to euthanize an animal is always really hard. No matter what the situation or what it is, it's always difficult to make that call and have to perform that procedure on an animal. You just have to think of it in terms of what's best for that animal. If it's going to be debilitated for the rest of its life, it's honestly best to just let it go. because most animals aren't, especially adult animals that are captured and then brought in, they'll never be happy in captivity. They'll always be stressed out around people. So making that call is difficult, but it's definitely a really necessary part of the job.
And maybe you release them and they're going to still be in pain for the rest of their lives because you never probably know exactly what might still be going on with them.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's hard. Have you had to perform that before?
Yep. It's actually a really common part of the job. It's especially in the summer, it's something we all have to do day to day. But like I said, you just have to think of it in terms of doing what's best for that animal in any given situation.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Apparently bunnies very often know what's right for them.
It may not even be right for them. They may just be stressed out a little bit.
It might. They're just stressed out about the possible decision. Yep.
If I was a bunny, I'd be long dead.
Oh, it's a good thing this pup is not a bun, because, yeah, exactly. Stressful pup. And, you know, that's because, you know, I preface all this by saying, I think I know the answer to this. What's the worst part of your job? And I'll let you tell us and see if I'm right. I was not right. I'll let you
what
know.
What were you thinking?
I thought you were going to say the worst part of your job was like cleaning up poop all day.
Oh, no.
But no, there are worse things than that.
Yeah, the poop you get used to. I don't even mind it anymore.
Okay, good. Good to know. So, in a better note, what's your favorite part of the job? Probably still not the poop, but...
Nope, definitely not the poop.
Wow, we have got a lot of poop talk on this episode.
It's inevitable talking about wildlife rehab.
Uh-huh. It's not their fault.
But yeah, my favorite part of the job is just, especially with infant animals, getting to see them grow up and then be released back into the wild where they belong. It's just super rewarding. There's nothing more fulfilling than being able to see like a clutch of birds I've raised from tiny naked infants to full-fledged birds that are able to be released and live out their lives. It's really amazing.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. So what's the like average amount of time that you end up usually having to take care of animals? I imagine it depends on the animal. And what's the longest from an inception? I don't know if that's the right word, but inception?
Intake.
Intake. Oh, yes.
The longest I've personally dealt with is an opossum that we assume was dragged by a car, like got caught under the tire and dragged down the road. And he had just these horrific big road rash wounds essentially on his back. And we had him for about 8 months. And then he was actually able to be released after those 8 months while the wound healed. So yeah, 6 months is usually kind of the limit unless we get a special extension from the state. But some animals can be released in a day, like if they hit a window and are stunned, and then we bring them in, examine them, are able to give them anti-inflammatory medications and things like that. Sometimes within a couple days, they're able to go out the door again.
Wow. Nice. Hmm. Nice. Well, and animals are pretty, I mean, not bunnies, obviously, but animals can be pretty resilient.
Oh, yeah. There's some pretty awesome, crazy injuries I've seen animals recover and be perfectly releasable after the fact.
Hmm. And are most of these deer, I'm going to guess most of these are deer, the ones that are the amazing recoveries.
No, not usually deer, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
A lot of the really crazy recoveries we see are actually birds with wing fractures, where it's just horrible breaks that we're able to, we have a vet we work with, and she's able to come in and do a pinning surgery on them. And then the bone heals, and we do physical therapy with them for a while, and then release them.
Hmm. Wow. And then they just go on their way. Do you ever, I don't think you're that type of thing, but do you ever track them to see how they're doing? Like maybe they're on the edge of not sure if they're ready or not, but you let them go and track them and see, make sure they're okay.
We don't track them. Sometimes we do work with bird banders, especially with the raptors we release. So sometimes we'll band our birds with the help of a licensed bird bander. And then we'll know at some point if the bird dies or if we never see that band again, we can assume that it survived and did pretty well for itself, things like that. But we don't do like radio tracking or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And did you just, so you've taken in raptors?
Correct. Not Jurassic Park raptors.
Okay. I was like, okay, well, you said you don't take in lions. And so
but
I
dinosaurs.
Think that would preclude vicious dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We definitely don't deal with those.
But maybe not. Okay.
Although birds are technically dinosaurs. So I guess in a way.
Oh,
I have to ask, so you release them back into the wild, and when you talked about releasing possums back into the wild, all I envisioned was you opening up the cage, and he kind of lumbers out and looks back at you like, yeah, thanks, and then lumbers on, and then looks back and goes, peace. You know, and then just goes away. That's how I envisioned an opossum being released back into the wild.
That's actually pretty accurate, yeah.
Oh, wow.
They're definitely typically not speedy animals. They kind of just slowly make their way out of the crate and slowly make their way somewhere to hide.
All right.
I wish all our listeners could just have seen what Catherine did to imitate them lumbering out. She did this nice, fun little backy forthy thing, and I could totally see, yeah, like that. See, I could totally see like a possum with a pit bull face.
Oh God,
lumbering off
you for Sony
into
don't know
the distance. I don't know. Oh my cow! So, what is the craziest or funniest experience that you've had in your job?
So, probably the most memorable for sure, and really funny, one of those things you just absolutely wish you had a video recording of, is we got in a juvenile weasel that someone had trapped that was getting into their chicken coop, and they brought it to us still in the humane trap. And it's, especially if you're trying to get them out in a contained way, it's hard to get animals out of humane traps sometimes. So me and my coworker there, we were gloved up because weasels bite extremely hard when they want to. And we were trying to figure out how to jimmy this trap open in a way that the weasel wouldn't just come flying out. And exactly what you'd expect would happen happened. This thing just comes flying out of the humane just trap. Flying out. Yeah, just absolutely springs out and immediately goes underneath our x-ray machine and climbs up the column where we can't get to it in any way. There's no way to like...
Oh no.
Yeah. So we spend probably a good 30 minutes like banging on the machine and trying to poke things down from the top without messing with the machine, of course. And eventually we have to call our boss in, and she comes over, and we're all three of us hitting this machine and shaking it and trying to move it around to get this weasel to come out. And I'm standing on top of it, looking down into the column from the top, and out of the corner of my eye, I see this weasel pop out from another cabinet and like, look at us. And then we all just were just falling all over ourselves and each other trying to get this thing. And one of us grabs it and it squirms out of our hands and it goes like springboarding back and forth off of us onto the counters. And just, it was chaos. I could hear Yakety Sax in the back of my mind just playing. But the only way we caught it is because it bit my coworker in the arm and wouldn't let go. It just latched onto her arm, and we had to pry this thing off of her and wrestle it into a container. It was just a mess.
That was very sacrificial of her. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she didn't mean to, but it was still very sacrificial.
Weasels are nuts.
Wow. And of course, when you're talking there, I have this picture of like this rubber weasel, just like point, like the cartoons and everything. Just
that's pretty much exactly how it moved. It was insane.
Oh, wow.
So speaking of insane and bouncing around, is Sarvi Wildlife the only center you've worked at? I mean, I know you've had the internship, but have you had other experiences at other wildlife centers or animal centers?
Yep. So my first internship was in Southern Oregon at Wildlife Images, and I did about a 3-month internship there. And then the next summer, I flew out to Maine to do the internship out there, which is about the same length. And then in 2018, I worked at a center in New Hampshire for 6 months, and then decided that particular center wasn't really for me. Moved back to Oregon, and then ended up coming up here to Washington to work at Sarvi. So back and forth between the two coasts.
Wow.
What's your favorite experience working in wildlife rehabilitation?
Oh man, probably absolute favorite was doing the fawn release this past fall, because I'd seen these babies come in, just teeny tiny little things. We had a fawn come in from Whidbey Island, and for some reason the deer there are just tiny compared to normal, like mainland deer, I guess you could say. They're almost like half the size. They're just itty bitty. Mm-hmm. The baby we got in was like tiny, no bigger than a chihuahua.
Wow.
But then seeing them grow up for 4 months while we take care of them, and then finally getting to drive them out into the woods in the middle of nowhere and release them and see them, you know, make their way off into the forest. It was just something else. It was really amazing.
Nice. Nice. So Whidbey Island, what kind of wildlife's on Whidbey Island besides tiny little deer?
So I can tell you it's the best for bird watching. I actually just took a trip out there a couple weekends ago to do birding, and it was phenomenal. I saw a short-eared owl for the first time in my life, a harlequin duck. It was really cool. Lots of waterfowl.
A harlequin duck. Did it write a romance for you?
I didn't ask him.
Oh, okay. You never know. You never know. So
yeah, I guess I should have. I didn't think about it.
I know, right? That little harlequin romance right there, right? For your own little... Your own little duck romance, you know, what could be better, right? So
my favorite book.
So what advice would you give to listeners in the event they encounter a wildlife they believe to be ill or injured? Should they just like go up and grab it, or what should they do?
So definitely if something is very obviously like injured, like you witnessed something get hit by a car and it's, you know, lying there on the side of the road broken or anything like that, absolutely still call your local wildlife center first to get their advice on how best to contain and handle this animal. But my number one piece of advice, especially if you're unsure in the situation, is to find and call your local wildlife rehabilitation center, because they can give you really invaluable advice about how to restrain, contain, and bring in the animal with the least harm done to the animal. Mm-hmm.
So you shouldn't call 911.
You can.
Okay.
Eventually those calls just come back to us anyways.
Okay.
So if you call something into the police or to like Fish and Game, it usually will just come back to us and they'll call us about it.
Okay. I wasn't sure because it's like, I don't know who my local wildlife is. So, I mean, it's like, I wouldn't know who to call.
So most states actually do have something on their...
Fluffbusters.
I guess you could consider us fluffbusters in a way. But yeah, so most state fish and wildlife agencies would have a list on their website of licensed wildlife rehabilitators. You can also just Google like your state, the town you're in, and then wildlife rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And that should come up with the closest one. Although we do have some issues every once in a while where people from out of state that also live in a town called Arlington will call us. Oh. I've had a couple from Massachusetts. So that was interesting.
Yeah, they didn't look for that little OR or their A. Yeah. And I was like,
Yes, there is.
There's also an Arlington, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. And Texas. Yeah. So we've gotten calls from Texas.
Yeah.
Yep. So definitely always search your state.
That's
nope. No fluff can scare me.
No fluff can scare you. So what's the biggest animal you've had at your center?
Black bears. We actually had two black bears last fall that we kept through until spring and then released them.
Wow. Yep. Wow. I'm a bear, but I'm not anything that you could rehab.
That would be illegal.
Yeah.
So they actually arrived before I started working at Sarvey, but from what I understand, someone called it into Fish and Game that there were orphaned cubs, and they were picked up by Fish and Game and transferred to another center first, and then eventually transferred to us because we had the space for them at the time.
Wow. How big is your staff?
It's a pretty big facility. We have, I'm trying to think of exact, maybe like 30 outside cages to hold animals of varying sizes. We just built a new eagle flight, actually. But yeah, we have quite a bit of space for animals. In the summer, I know we can get in excess of 300 animals at a time that we're caring for. So you definitely got to have a lot of cage space for that.
Wow, for 300 animals. That's amazing.
We have 4 full-time rehabilitators. And then in the summer, we do get a handful of interns and a seasonal.
So I have to ask, have you ever had an animal that refuses to leave? They're like, hey, this is so much fun. I'm going to stick around.
Typically, no, especially all the adult animals just want to get the heck out of there as fast as they can. Every once in a while, if we release like baby songbirds that we raised on the property, we'll see them around occasionally. But no, most animals disperse very quickly.
Okay. All right. I had a friend who many, many years ago, I was in grade school, and this baby squirrel literally fell out of the tree on his shoulder. And it just kind of sat there and, and looked at him and looked at me. And we were like, what do we do?
Oh
we
my
were
gosh.
In sixth grade. Like, we're like, what do we do? I said, well, just, I'm sure the mother's around. Just, you know, shrug it off. Don't touch it, but just shrug it off and the mother will come and get it. And he shrugged it off, and it just followed us. It followed us home. I don't know whether it bonded with him or not at that moment. I have no idea. I mean, we didn't put it in a cage. We had it. He had like a treehouse out back that we had built. And so we put him in there and figured, you know, if he wants to go somewhere, he can leave, you know. And we brought him food and stuff. And every once in a while, he would disappear for 3 or 4 days and come back a little bit bigger. And but he always would go and sit next to Rich whenever we were outside or anything. It was just the weirdest thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you're putting food out for them, they'll come back. Especially once they realize you're not a threat to them in any way, they're like, ah, yeah, free nuts. This is the best.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, okay. But I just thought it was the weirdest thing when, you know, walking along the street and it flops right on your shoulder, ploop. It's like, oh no, what's this? It's like, eh.
Yeah, just plopped out.
Is Sarvi the charity of choice for A&W?
So far we have been, yeah. And as far as I've heard, when Anthro Northwest is kind of back up and operational, we will continue to be the charity.
Nice. Well, Catherine, that kind of brings us to the end of our session together. Thank you for coming on the show. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you think is important to tell our listeners?
So our website is sarveywildlife.org, S-A-R-V-E-Y, wildlife. And there is actually a PayPal donation button right on the homepage. So if anyone out there is interested, we are more than grateful for any monetary donations.
So I always like to ask our guests at the end of every interview, what is your parting shot? What are your words? What are your words of wisdom to the fandom?
Oh man, I don't know if I'm the best person to ask for wise words, but definitely in the fandom, there's a lot of people that are interested in work with animals. So get out there and reach out to people and just get as much experience and advice as you can from people that are active in the career fields of your choice. I know tons of furries that want to be vets or wildlife rehabbers or work at zoos. So just make those connections as fast as you can. Do as many internships as you possibly can. Read all you can. So just always pursue what you're interested in, because there was a while where I wasn't working in rehab, and getting back into it, I realized how much it means to me. So definitely, if you're interested in a field like this, pursue it. It's worth it.
Cool. Great. Yeah. Well, and you know, us furs have so much more, I don't want to say so much more, but we have so much of an affinity and connection to animals, especially our species, that
absolutely. Yeah.
I could see where that could be so much more rewarding, fulfilling for to yourself and to the animals and to all those that care about them. So yeah, it's a very, very wonderful thing you do. Thank you so much, Catherine. And Zaf, good to see you again, Zaf.
Well, thank you for coming on our show. It's been wonderful to have you on our show. And we hope that we make a little bit of a difference for Sarvi so that maybe some of our listeners will be able to help out, donate something, send some cash your way. You know, if nothing else, we've educated furs and friends and everybody in the Potiverse about what wildlife rehabilitation is all about. So again, thanks for coming on the show, Catherine.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. We were so excited when you guys reached out to us. And as soon as they got the email, they were like, Catherine's a furry. She can do it.
She can do it. It's like, there's no question here. Like, duh, come on. No, that's great. Well, it'll be really exciting to hug you again at some con somewhere someday. Hopefully A&W this year. We'll see.
Yeah, someday we'll get back to conventions. Fingers crossed that people get their vaccinations and all the rates go down, because I would love to go to a convention again.
Wouldn't we all? Yes.
I think there's a few of us that might be in that fluff boat. So yeah, hopefully soon. Great. See you around. Have a good day, Catherine.
Thank you. You too. Have a good night.
Okay. Well, that was kind of interesting. I did not know a lot of that stuff.
There is a lot of stuff. Yeah. No, I definitely learned a lot. There's a lot of good things there. She was a lot of fun to talk to. A lot of good information for all his furs and everyone out there. And of course, it was great that we have I don't know if the word is insider furry. You know, we've got one working on the inside for us now.
There you go. But, the insider furry. Yeah. Furry on the inside.
On the inside. And it was actually a nice flashback, because, like, as I was saying, we had met her at, you know, moons ago. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe 4 moons ago. But anyway, we'd met her before. And once she started talking about who she was and her persona and everything, it's like, oh, I totally remember. I know exactly what she looks like. So anyway, that was a fun blast from the past for this pup at the same time. But yeah, very many, many good things to say. I think a lot of furs got some good information. So all you furs out there, of course, you already know this, but, you know, support your local centers. They could use the help. And our friendly furry things that are out there need help too, or stuff. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is time now for one of our ever popular, ever present, ever
something or other
aggravating for some furries in the news.
Here we go. Here we go. What's going to happen this time? What is going to happen this time? I don't know. Seriously, I don't know what I'm going to do right now, so I'm just going to try it. Furries are in. Where are they in? They're in. Spark, I'm drowning apparently. Bye bye, Bark.
My God.
What even just happened right there?
I don't know.
So you first, you just need to send in and let us know.
Yeah, if you wanted to stop doing that, please let us know. Yeah, I could find nothing for Furries in the News this week. Did you find anything?
I sort of not. I mean, it's really this the current meme that's going around. You know, there's always a meme going around and stuff. So there's this thing on Twitter floating around, draw wolf face.
I don't know about this.
Well, it's relatively new. It started like as of this recording started like 2 days ago or something. I want to look into the origins of it because I don't know how it started. So if you know where Draw Wolf Face came from and the origins and history, let us know because I'd love to know. It's just this little wolf face where they've blurred out the wolf and you're supposed to draw wolf face. So you draw on it. And so if you look through Twitter, you'll see lots of the blurred out version and then they've drawn a wolf face on it. And it's just like this thing that's happening. So I have yet to do it, but that's what I have for furries in the news, I guess.
All right. So go out and draw a wolf face. No upcoming events that I could find either. At least not. There's upcoming events, but we'll talk about ones when they get closer.
When they happen. Yeah.
That pretty much takes us to the end of furries in the news, which takes us now up to math. And I think you were going to talk about Euler's method or Euler's, not Euler, Euler's method.
Euler's method.
It's spelled Euler's. It is. But it's pronounced totally Euler's.
Probably lots of people are like this, but when I first did, I said Euler all the time. And then someone finally corrected me, said it's Euler. And it's like, no, what? And anyway, so it's really funny, but.
It's like, why don't you spell it correctly if you're going to pronounce it that way?
Shout out to Hexflame.
Again,
who is a fur in the chat. Last time I did math, so two episodes ago, I talked about Hexflame had requested that I talk about bees and the science of bees. And the question was, why are their honeycombs hexagons? And so I talked about that a little bit. And by the way, so for any fur that wants me to talk about math or something or as a question, send it in and I'll do that. He had another question. His question was, what is Euler's method? This is a thing. If you know some math and stuff, this is something I could just say in like three sentences what it is, just because you have that background. But, you know, I want to impart how wonderful math is and explain some ideas surrounding this. So I'll take a few more than three sentences. Let me start by talking about, so in the real world, what does math want to do? And science, it wants to model things, right? Mathematically, how do you model something? You model it by a function or equations. You need something to compute with, something you can plug into a computer, something to get information out so that you can apply it to your real world. So that's what a model is. You do it with functions, you do it with equations. In the real world, it's very unlikely that you can get something exact, right? There's too many factors involved. So a lot of times we have to approximate what is going on and use that approximation. And there's all these methods to approximate how well can you approximate and all that stuff. But when it comes down to it, we approximate our models and our functions of what's really going on. For example, like you might need a model temperature, right? Maybe you want to have a nice prediction for what the temperature is going to do based on other data. So you use previous data, you get a function or equation or something out of it, and you use that to model or to try and predict what the temperature is going to be, or ocean waves and things. I mean, so many different things that you might want to predict or model to try and get a hold on how it works. If you think of what a function is, an equation or something, you can graph it, like visually, what is it? Well, you can see it as like a curve floating around, and you can plot it on an XY plane and all that mathy stuff. But when it comes down to it, you've got a function, you've got a model, you can visualize it by, it's just a graph, a curve of some sort. How do you approximate a graph? Like, what does it mean to estimate what your graph looks like? If you're going to get information about the real world, you have, what do you have? You have this graph that approximates what's really happening in the real world. You use that to do your thing. Okay, so we need to approximate things. And how do we do that with the graph? Well, if you think about it, if you take a point on the graph, just think of a curve and think of a point on that. You got it, Barely? You got a point?
Yes, I have a point.
Okay, you have a point, and it's on the graph. So you just imagine a curve. You got a point on it. And slightly to the right on that graph is the exact value that you're trying to find something out about. Yes?
Okay.
But we don't know the exact function, so we can't find the exact value, but we want to approximate it. Okay, what's a good way to approximate it? What if at that point you're thinking of, draw a straight line, just nicking the curve at that point. So you've got a straight line at that point.
Okay.
Now,
sure.
Go over to the right, just a little bit to the right, to the point on the curve that you really want to know the exact value. Okay. If you knew the value on that line, like that line is really close to the curve if you're really close to that point, right?
Okay.
So if you knew the value on that line, you would have a really good approximation to the exact value you're looking for on the curve.
Okay.
I mean, right? That just totally makes sense. This idea is something called linear approximation and is very useful. And it's not just like happens every now and then. This is a lot of how computers approximate things, how things are approximated in engineering and science and all kinds of things. This is something you learn about in your first 1 or 2 weeks of your first term of calculus. I mean, and it's not a hard idea. It's a very useful idea. And you don't even need calculus to like figure out the equation of this line. You can use basic algebra to find out the equation. So this is something very computable, and you can approximate really, really well with this. And it's very useful.
Okay.
Actually getting to Euler's method. As a side note, this is a very cool, useful idea in math. And for anyone that's taking first term calculus, I hope this idea helped you out with linear approximation. So when you have a line, so now we're really talking about lines, and we want to be able to deal with the line, which we can, you know, it's a line. We can do a lot with the line, right? So this is great. One of the first things you learn in any algebra class is how to find the equation of a line. Okay, you can do that. What do you need? You know, you need a slope. A line has a slope. One way to think about a slope is the ratio of how far you go up to how far you go over. Hold on to that idea for a second while I say there's this word in calculus. The word is derivative. It's your first term calculus. You come across this word very quickly. And derivative is just a mathy way to say rate of change in general, the rate at which something changes. Now, I'm getting there, I promise. I'm glad we're together so far. Now, if you think about it, the slope of a line, it's a rate of change. It's how fast or slow your line is going up. It's a rate of how much your slopes are changing. So in the real world, what do we care about? Well, we care about modeling things like I talked about. And if you're going to model something with a function or equations, somehow you've got to put into that equation rates of change. Things are changing all the time, the temperature, the blah, blah, blah. And if you're going to model that effectively, you've got to incorporate into your equation somehow the rate at which things change. Not just the thing, but the rate at which they change. Now, a rate of change, as I said, that's mathy. The mathy talk is derivative. Okay, so if we're going to model things in the real world, we need equations that have derivatives in them somehow. You've got to have equations that talk about the rates at which things change. In mathy terms, that means you need equations that have derivatives in them. The mathy way to say an equation that has a derivative in it is differential equation, which sounds crazy and everything, but that's all it is. It's a differential equation. It's just an equation that has rates of change in it. That's literally what it is. We are almost there. We are just hold on just a few more seconds. We are almost there.
All right.
in the real world, we wanted to model things and solve things, which means we need to solve these things called differential equations. We need to solve equations that have rates of change in them. Now, since it's the real world, we need to approximate things by, and a good way to do that is by lines and stuff. Euler's method. Yes. Here we are.
We have arrived at the method.
So Euler's method is a numerical method. So it's a way to approximate solutions of differential equations using this idea of linear approximations. That is using lines that approximate the solutions to these differential equations. Because let me say again, the solutions to these differential equation things, rates of change, these will be functions, but you can't always solve these things. We need to approximate them. So we have methods to do so. And one such method is called Euler's method. We made it through. I feel that you actually held on that entire time barely.
I did hold on. It was like a rattly subway ride. I held on to the handle.
Yeah. And it was rattling. You were shaking a little bit, but you made it to the end.
Pre-COVID subway ride.
Yes, exactly.
Because you hold the handle, Beth. No, COVID subway rides, you don't hold the handle.
I don't even know what you do.
I think you just stay 6 feet apart in the subway, which has got to be impossible.
And hope not to fall over or something. I don't know.
Or hang on with your coat or something. I don't know.
Or hang on with, exactly. Let me just tell you, barely, that the amazing thing is a lot of people think that calculus can be really difficult to explain and everything like that. I just explained a few concepts in not only your first term calculus class to you barely, but also in a differential equations class, which you usually don't take until like your fifth, say, term of calculus. And it wasn't bad, right?
Can I get a degree now?
I think you're about there. All you need is a few more of those, what do we call them? Continuing education credits.
Education years. And that's right.
You got your degree. So like, anyway.
I just imagine I'm the host of a podcast where math is talked about every other week. I would like my degree. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
They would say, sounds great. Send us $4,000 for tuition and we will give you a degree.
There you go.
So now it is time for our section on really bad jokes. I have to say that I did actually search out some bad jokes. Tabin has a book and he doesn't read the questions or the jokes ahead of time. Which is actually very funny because a lot of times we don't understand the jokes because the book comes from what year? What era?
1968 is when it comes from. Yes. This book is 75 cents back in 1978 or 68. Sorry.
Tabin?
Yes.
Give us a joke out of your great book of...
Not great jokes. The next page I would be reading is the left page, but, and I haven't read the joke on the right page, but the first one looks interesting. So maybe I just do the right page and do the left page next time. I was worried that I was going to end up skipping a page if I went to the right page first, but it's okay to go back if I need to, I think.
Yeah, no one cares.
Exactly. No one would even know.
If you had just read a joke, they wouldn't know if you were in the left page or the right page.
Even
it's
if
not like they're reading
care.
Along.
They're not reading along, it's true. Okay, I'm just going to go with, I won't tell you the page. I'm going in the right order. Mr. Fluff says, I made up the fluff part. That's my, it doesn't say in the book, but Mr. Fluff says, can you lend me $500? Mr. Puff says, I only have $400. Mr. Fluff says, that's all right. You can owe me the other 100. So this is one of those where I think I get it, but
yeah,
the amount of not cool, nice. I don't even know what the right word for this is. So I'm starting out by saying this is a really bad joke book, and that was an example.
That's true. Do you know what one elevator said to the other elevator?
Pick me up before you go go.
Wake me up before you go go.
Good answer, but no, he said, I think I'm coming down with something.
Oh yeah, no. Okay, yeah, I like that better than the $400, $500 thing. But did you know that? There was this teacher somewhere said to Carol, teacher said, Carol, use Beatles in a sentence. Okay, barely, I'm just going to make you guess what the punchline is here because I know you know what the punchline is.
Use Beatles in a sentence. You know, I should, but I don't. So what's the punchline?
Oh, you're going to hate yourself for not like, getting it.
Oh, I'm sure I will, yeah.
Carol says, By George, said John, I think Paul's lost his Ringo. That was actually pretty good, though.
You know, Tabin, I've been looking for a second job.
Oh, really?
I know. I thought about being a hotel clerk, but I had reservations.
I'm Tom Baudet from Motel 6, and we'll leave the light on for you.
Oh, you would make the greatest hotel clerk then, I must say. That's also, I think that's also what the Indian chief said when he was looking for a job.
Okay.
Because he had reservations. So the teacher then says to Mindy, Mindy, do you know what climate means? Mindy says, oh my Lord, oh my Lord.
There's a mountain and I must climb it?
Pretty much. I mean, okay. So Mindy actually said that's what most boys do when they see a ladder, but really what you said, yeah.
Okay.
You're so smart, Mr. Burley, I must say.
I didn't get the Beatles joke, which I should have gotten. I was in a bakery the other day.
Oh, was there a lot of powder puffs?
No, but it was a bread bakery. They had tasting samples. You could taste the bread. Mm. And this one bread was so, so good.
Oh,
it was the best bread I had ever tasted in my entire life. And yeah. I asked the baker for the recipe, but he said it was on a need to know basis.
Yeah, it sure was. But speaking of guava fruit.
Guava fruit, yes.
The doctor... one asks his patient, what seems to be your trouble? And the patient, Dr. Jones, who wasn't a doctor, says,
doctor.
I have trouble breathing. The doctor says, here's something to stop that. So I turned the page thinking that the rest of the joke would be at the top of the next page. Guess what? That was the end of the joke. So wow. Let me try this again. This was a good example of what Burley was talking about, how sometimes we don't. So the doctor says, what seems to be the trouble? Jones says, I have trouble breathing. The doctor says, here's something to stop that.
Stop her breathing. I don't know why that's funny.
I
don't know
I
why
mean,
that's funny
people
at all.
Dying is kind of not fun. So what I'm not
funny.
Quite getting. So Rain, chief fact checker, or any other fur, please help us out with this one.
There's a new computer-based music group out. Their name is 999 Megabytes. They haven't gotten a gig yet.
I told that long ago on the show.
Did you?
Yes.
Did you? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, then I have a new theory about inertia, but it isn't gaining any momentum.
Oh, well.
Is that better?
Stupid. I accept.
I think we've tortured our listeners long enough. What do you think?
I think the inertia thing is true. It hasn't gotten momentum. So for any of you physics furs out there,
physics furs,
is a physics fur a fursix?
Fursix.
Like
fursix science.
Forensic science.
Forensic science. It's a very strange thing about how you can make logical connections with different words like that.
Yeah.
Kind of like I wanted to be an atheist, but I saw no profit in it.
Oh, my cow. I see what you did there. I see.
We have come to the end. We've worked our way through it. And, you know, sometimes the only way over is through, they say. And we've gone through a lot. Thank you all for sticking around and tolerating us this week for our time together.
You really masochists out there, my cow.
I know. We appreciate all our listeners, but especially you. And you know who you are. We appreciate you the most. Now, remember.
Obviously, the goat out there, because it's the you.
Is that a sheep?
I meant the sheep. I meant that. No, like, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's okay.
What is a female goat called?
That's for next week's today.
So remember, the pod is a labor of love for Tavin and I, and it's supported by listeners like you. I sound like NPR. But anyway, be sure to come back next week. Our last guest of the season is going to be Pepper Coyote.
Yay, Pepper.
He's going to talk to us about his recent Twitter storm that he caused.
That's right.
And tell us how that all happened.
Oh.
And about his life as a furry musician. So tune in. You won't want to miss this one. Until next week, remember to stay flurry. Well, flurries are good from Dairy Queen, so you can stay a flurry if you'd like. But remember to stay furry and moo bark fluff.
And moo bark fluff. My new persona is a Dairy Queen flurry. I get cold a lot. But I like the sprinkles, and it's pretty great.
And what would your flursona be?
My my Flursona is a chocolate chip and raspberry sprinkled. Nice. Yeah, exactly. For any for that didn't know, because we've talked about this before, apparently people, when we say fox and myrrh, people don't know unless fox and peppers, and then they know. So Pepper Coyote, in the same vein, Pepper Coyote, our guest on next week's show, is Pepper from Fox and Peppers, just in case you didn't know. No, very, very fun to talk to. Check it out. It'll be a very enlightening episode, might I say. But yes, thank you all you first for listening. It means so much to us that you listen and support us, either monetarily or just listening means a lot to us. So thank you so much. Oh, and speaking of which, I guess, speaking of NPR, barely, if any fur wanted to support us monetarily, how can they do so?
Oh, they can do so through Ko-Fi or through Patreon.
Okay.
There you go.
That was very anticlimactic, but there it is.
Well, it's in the closing credits, Taven. It's in the closing credits.
Oh, so. Yeah, it is. So, but, well, for any further that doesn't listen to the closing credits. Listen to the closing credits so that you can hear what we just talked about. But yes, yeah. Any further, thank you so much for listening. It means so much to us. Can't wait to hug you with Posies again at a con and things. Listen next week. I hope you enjoyed. I hope we enjoyed. We enjoyed you. And I hope you also, we entertained you is what I tried to say. You know that. So again, moo bark fluff. Definitely moo bark fluff. And until next time, bark, bark.
Barely Furcasting is an Injured Nerves studio production and is found on all major podcast platforms or can be heard directly at barelyfurcasting.com. The opinions expressed here are those of the hosts and their guests, and no commercial compensation was granted. The Furcast is produced, recorded, and directed by me, Barely Normal, a.k.a. Mike Began, and is edited by myself and our associate editors, Rain Raccoon and Bixby Wolf. This week's interview is edited by Rain Raccoon. Opening and closing theme music, as well as some interstitial music, was created for Injured Nerves Productions for the use on the podcast by our music associate, Reg Day, with Damian Tanuki. If you would like to hear more of music by Reg Day, you can search for Tweezerbeak on Bandcamp or Hoop Loop Tunes on SoundCloud. Other interstitial and background music by Shane Ivers through SilvermanSound.com and the YouTube Free Use Library. If you would like to send us a message, you can do so via email at barelyfurcasting@gmail.com or on our Telegram chat at BFFTChat, on Twitter, on our Facebook page, or on the barelyfurcasting.com webpage. You can support the show through donations at ko-fi.com/barelyfurcasting or through Patreon at patreon.com/barelyfurcasting. Thanks for listening. We hope you come back and listen next week.